Vroom, vroom. That's the sound of a bike. Sort of. Not my best sound effect, but Ryan's head's in his hands already. And welcome to Close Up, everybody else. I'm Joe.
And I'm Ryan. I did not expect that. Oh my god.
Gotta keep you on your toes. For the grand return of Close Up after a couple weeks hiatus here, we're talking about the bike riders today. Now, before we go in from our extreme long shot here, I do a little housekeeping. Ryan and I just recently decided that Close Up is going to start releasing bi-weekly from here on in. We'll give you a couple reminders on the Close Up Facebook page and also let you know again at the start of the next episode. Just for those of you who weren't watching this one, and if you weren't, what's wrong with you? I mean, you're here, but like, what's wrong with those of you who weren't watching this one? Shame. Anyway, going into our medium
shame.
Shot.
Shame. It's a Game of Thrones reference. You haven't watched it. Shame. Anyway.
Going into our medium shot now, what was your expectations going into this?
Well, I saw the trailer a few months ago, and I was like, Austin Butler, cool. He's in another movie, which is good, because I was afraid he was going to get the Hollywood treatment of him being in this massive movie, and it was so massive that everybody was afraid to cast him. But now it seems like even either a little bit after he filmed Elvis or around the same time or after the whole thing, he just filmed a shit ton of work. And now they're all pumping out now, which is good. And then I saw Tom Hardy was in it as well. I was like, I love Tom Hardy. He's one of my favorite actors. He's so good. So I was about bike riders as a Sons of Anarchy fan. Could be interesting, you know, to see a more quote unquote realistic take on it. Heard it was about or based on true events or based on like the real guys. Saw Jodie Comer was in it, who I adore. She's a fantastic actress. So I was pretty hyped going into this movie. But yeah, it's basically my backstory on this.
I had very little hype whatsoever, besides the fact that, Austin Butler and Tom Hardy are doing a movie together about bike riders. Could be cool. I didn't even see Jodie Comer was in it prominently until I watched the movie, really. I didn't watch the trailer attentively enough, or I just didn't realize she was a big part of it. Which is why the fact that she's basically the protagonist threw me for a loop, but we'll get to that very soon. Basically I wasn't that hyped for it, but it had my curiosity. What could this thing be about? Let's see. In our close up. So, sounds to me like you had more problems with this than I did, so you want to just rip the bandage off, get right into it?
It's weird because I just feel like the marketing failed me in terms of what it was trying to set me up to be. And I understand at a certain level for marketing, you gotta get butts in seats. Which this film isn't doing, sadly. We just looked up box office. It's not doing great. And it just looked like it was like another sort of like gang affiliated story where this group is, you know, Tom Hardy's character is building up Austin Butler's character to take over and run the gang. I don't even remember who the gang's name is. I saw this so long ago. It's
It was the Vandals.
Vandals, yeah.
Chicago,
but yeah,
Vandals.
I thought, I'm going to watch like another sort of Sons of Anarchy type film about this gang and it trying to battle, you know, the police, but also other gangs as well. And maybe that's just because I only saw like the one trailer, and maybe there's other marketings that tell me something else, but I don't believe it at the same time. But what it really was, and here's the interesting part too, is because even though the marketing failed me, what it turned out to be, I think would have been a better movie than what I originally thought it was. Okay.
I concur.
Yeah, because if it was just like a basic
gangster movie,
doesn't matter on the writing, gangster movie, be like, okay, it's just another one of these. But what this film really is, it's about sort of a love letter to, you know, this era of like America and the, you know, outcasts and how motorcycles embrace a sense of freedom.
The golden age of motorcycle clubs.
Yeah.
Is what they
like
called
the
it.
Very start of what motorcycle clubs were supposed to be and what should be. And then you kind of see the downfall of that. And I think it was a very beautiful love letter to that golden age. Especially with some scenes, some dialogue, pretty much all of Michael Shannon's performance. I think I was so entranced with his performance and what he was saying the whole time. You know, there's still hints of, you know, outlaw stuff in there. They, you know, set a bar on fire but get revenge and all that. But so there's a little bit of action, but it just wasn't. And I had this realization, I think, in the final act of the movie, where I was like, oh, this is just what it is. So I appreciate it for what it is. I just wish the marketing itself sort of like kept true to that story element. I don't know. It's a weird thing. But also, how do you depict that in a 2-minute trailer? I don't know.
Yeah, I went in basically expecting, okay, motorcycle, gangster stuff. Sure. Bunch of tough guys, maybe a bit of action, what have you. And I pretty much settled and knew it within the first act when I saw that, okay, this thing is an interview with Kathy. Although the editing threw me for a loop there because I think there was a subtitle or text, or there was an on-screen text that said something like Kathy's interview, which gave me the implication that there were going to be multiple interviewees for the film or something. Like, oh, we're just...
That's
okay,
what I
just,
thought.
Like,
I
oh, we're just getting
Kathy.
Yeah, like, we're getting Kathy just for the start, and then there's going to be somebody else, and then the whole movie is Kathy. So I'm like, why did you have that text up front saying Kathy's interview? That's just unnecessarily confusing. You made me assume there'd be more if you felt the need to name drop this one. The movie could have just set itself up fine if you didn't have that.
Yeah, because they do it again in, like, 87 or 73 or something. And, like 9 years later. And they do Kathy's second interview. It's like, well, you could just put the year. Everything would have been fine. You made me think there'd be multiple interviews. And you lied to me. How dare you?
There was a little bit. But, like, Kathy's point of view was clearly the main one. But,
yeah.
Okay, the only other one that's springing to mind right now is when he interviews Michael Shannon about his enlistment story. When he tells Grayson about how he so desperately wanted to get in the army, but what was the problem again? He passed all the tests with flying colors, but he wasn't the right fit. He wasn't that clean-cut American boy that they were looking for.
Yeah,
which in my mind was really okay. What the army's looking for are people who will follow orders unquestioningly, and that is not you, sir. You are not the kind of person who will... you're the kind of person who thinks for yourself and doesn't just follow orders blindly. And that is why they didn't want you. I could tell immediately. But I understand his... I don't think he realizes that. To him, he just sees authority unfair. I don't get it. I wanted this so badly. And then they... What got to me about that scene, though, was he was like, you gotta have guys like me who really wanted to fight. And then they draft these pinkos from college who protest the war and didn't want to go. And he's like, how's that fair? I wanted to go. They didn't. So what gives? It was an interesting point about just the state of America at the time.
Yeah, it was an insight into America I didn't even think existed at the time. Like rejecting people to join the army willingly. Willingly. Yeah, it's quite an interesting story. It's like this movie feels as if it was. This is gonna sound like a diss, but it sounds like it was one of those films that was written in like the mid 2000s or 2010s as one of those, like wild card movies. And then,
sure,
I feel like this type of movie would have done really popular in the mid 2010s because of like the DVD sales, but that's not a thing anymore.
No, I can see that
because it's a simple story.
It's the kind of movie
so much
that would get us better Second Life on home video than in a theatrical run. I feel like it could be a cult hit or something like that. Just want to skip back to that college story one more time because I have to acknowledge that was the funniest joke of the movie. When he's going on and on about how he hates all these college boys and then he asks the photographer, "So, how'd you get into photography anyway?" "I studied it in college."
Yeah.
And then Michael Shannon has to have a laugh at that even. He liked the irony there. But I like the balls on the photographer to, after this whole rant, he just lays it out. Just shows their relationship. Yeah. Pretty well, and okay, even the tough biker guy can laugh it off, and the photographer's not so afraid of him that he won't share that detail about himself just dryly. I like the relationships between the characters in this movie. I think they were fairly well established, especially the main triangle between Kathy, Johnny, and Benny. You kind of understand the push and pull. Once again, this is not what I expected this movie to be. Is a fight for Benny's soul. Is he going to be the nice lover boy Kathy knows him to be, or the tough gangster boy that Johnny wants him to be? Is he going to settle down or take over the gang? Which I could, I could kind of tell it was going that way from the very first shot. And I thought I was crazy looking at the cinematography this way. But the very first scene, when he's sitting at the bar, I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. They're framing him two different ways. Half the time his face is in the light, half the time his face is in the shadow. I thought, okay, is this some kind of visual metaphor from scene one? He's half in light, half in shadow. And it wasn't until way later in the movie, I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, that was exactly it. That's what they're telling us right from scene one. It's the tug of war between the light and the dark.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting because I don't think... I'm not saying that Austin Butler's performance was bad, because it wasn't. I just felt like...
He had such a tough job. It's the material.
It's...
Benny's...
Yeah, it's... There's, Benny like, nothing for him to do. Besides, like, he's the silent warrior in the gang, and he's the one who's probably the most violent near the beginning of the story. He gets into all these fights and in these confrontations. And he's kind of the silent warrior type as well. But again, it's just like they talk about, Johnny talks about how much Tom Hardy's character talks about him as, you know, he's the next in line. He should be the next leader. And Kathy talks about him as well. And you're seeing the two different sides of him. But all we know about Benny is from what these two other characters are telling us and not from what we're seeing. And all we do see is him either ride a motorcycle away from the cops, or get into fights. Like, that's the only thing we see, and the other stuff is just exposition. I don't really appreciate that in terms of storytelling.
I think Austin Butler plays the subtext very well. I can tell Benny loves Kathy with just a glance. You know, he's got the way he looks at her. When Johnny asks him whether he wants to take over the gang, you can tell just by his facial reactions, by his hesitance, he's mulling it over and he's like, well, I don't really want to take over the gang, especially not the way it's become. He doesn't say yes or no. There's no dialogue there, but the context is important enough. Even later on, Johnny was like, what would you do if I offered you to take over the gang? Would you turn me down or say nothing, basically? So even without the dialogue, you do get hints of this character. Okay, he got his foot broken, and he still wants to ride his bike anyway, even though it could lead to permanent injury. All right, like, we get enough snip. Okay, and there's scene one. He gets into the fight because he refuses to take his colors off, which is also interesting when you put into consideration there's that line when they say that all these guys, they wear their colors proudly, but rarely ever when they're apart from each other, because they don't want to get singled out like Benny did. So the fact that he does that shows he's got more courage and pride in the Vandals than most of the other Vandals. So between the visual storytelling, Austin Butler's subtlety, and the few lines he gets, you do see a lot about this character. But frankly, Benny's more of a blank slate than I wanted him to be, and Butler is mostly making this character up with stray facial glances. Basically, everything I'm telling you here isn't on the page. It's just him reacting to things very skillfully as an actor. He's making something out of nothing.
Such a tough job. Yeah, it's crazy how much he tries to do with so little, and I can see this not hitting well with people. Like, I can see people watching this movie and being like, "What the hell was that? I don't understand what just happened." But there's so much subtext with his performance. I do think it is a good one, especially with his entire journey with his own emotions and how Kathy talks about how these guys, you know, they don't really show their emotions. They don't even cry in front of their own wives unless it's at these certain occasions. And then his whole journey, even when he got fucked up by those two guys in the bar, he holds back the tears. He doesn't want to appear weak. And then finally, when certain character dies at the end, he just fully lets it out because he just can't handle it anymore. And I think that part of the performance was done really well.
Full spoilers, by the way. I don't know if I said that up top, but we can get into that. So if you're, you know, if you got this far in thinking we weren't going to spoil things, I'll give you a 3, 2, 1. Okay. Yeah, I like the bit when Kathy talks about his crying, like, oh, well, he never cried when his own father died. Nothing to cry about there. But then when Johnny dies, he just lets it all out.
Yeah. And Johnny's death, like, I think it's because I've seen so many fucking, gang-related movies. But when he's going to his final, to that final fight with the kid, and they both get out of the car, and I see the kid turn around. I'm like, oh, he's just going to shoot him. I immediately knew. He's like, oh, he's just going to shoot him. And it's going to be, and it's not even the film's fault for not being super creative. It's just my encyclopedia.
You've seen
of
too
films
many.
And television. I've seen too many of this, like, oh, they're not even going to fight. He's just going to shoot him in the face.
Well, yeah, I didn't necessarily see that far ahead. I knew he wasn't gonna play fair. Like, I knew he was gonna die. I think it's because in my mind I wasn't looking for the cause of death so much as all the signs that he was going to die in that fight. What I thought was interesting about the lead up to it was that we see him talk to his wife at home for the first time in most of the movie, and then he takes his car there. Doesn't take his bike there, he takes his car there. And I'm like, that to me is a signal of this guy is tough on the outside, but he's kind of a conformist at heart. He's got the wife and the kids and the suburban home and he drives a car. He's kind of a normal guy. And this kid is, you know, shows up on the motorbike, shoots him in the face or just in the chest or whatever. He's got no honor. He lives the gangster bike life 100%. It's the old traditionalist way versus the up and coming, and the differences are stark and well presented. I just like how they present Johnny as this tough guy the entire movie, the number one motorcycle guy, and then in the end you see, well, they remind you he is more conformist than he lets on. He's got a day job.
Yeah.
And like the biking is just one aspect of him. It's not his whole personality. It's just mostly what we're seeing in this movie.
Yeah. It's more of just like a sense of community for him, and that's how they talk about it with this golden age. It's not like this gain his entire life. It's a bunch of these, you know, nobodies outcasts. Misfits, outcasts, you know, join together just to have a sense of community because nobody else wants to associate with them. And they all do that just, you know, by having the simple pleasure of they like to ride motorcycles. And that is just the entire movie. And it's that simple. And I feel like it will be hard for people to understand. But it's nice to see, like, the individuals in that group as well. And if you think about it, because this movie is based off a picture book, it tells like a picture book. There's not really much, you know, full act 1, 2, 3 plot going. It's more of like, here's an insight into these people's lives and here's what happened. Do I wish there was more of a cohesive story? Sure. I like that with everything, but this is different. And I appreciated I respected the way it was told. Anyway, none of it didn't make sense, but there was a lot of, it reminded me of Napoleon, where it was like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. It was where it didn't feel connected, really. It was just like, here's stuff that happened in this area and in this time period.
Yeah, I think the reason the movie kept my attention was because there was two things going on in this movie. Two major arcs, as far as I'm concerned. The first one is about Johnny, Kathy, and Benny. It's the fight for Benny's soul. And that was mixed to watch because Benny is not that interesting a character. So really, I'm just here for Kathy and Johnny in this particular plot line. The second plot line, which was a lot more engaging, is just about the general downfall of the golden age of motorbiking alongside American society, generally speaking. Just how, yeah, you know, back then, like when the club first started, most of the bikers are, yeah, they're a little rough and tumble, but they're kind of like, I don't know, the T-Birds from Greece. They are still more clean cut comparatively. They're just, you know, they're just like foul-mouthed, troublemaking guys who like to ride motorbikes. Ooh. But then later, you start getting into the guys who are into hard drugs. They're like, they had the long, unkempt beards. Their hygiene's clearly a lot worse. They're a lot more violent. And this is post-Vietnam, psychologically troubled. They don't even respect Johnny's authority as much. They're even to the point where the old school motorcycle club guys are scared of these guys. They're not like, hey, man, we're just here to ride motorcycles. You know, all this crime and drugs and everything. It's bad. Like, we're not really for that. I think there was one point Kathy even mentioned, like, the club started dividing between, like, beer drinkers and marijuana
weed smokers.
Yeah. And that was before things got really bad for the club, but that was when the divide started. You're like, okay, yeah, there's the old school versus the new school.
Yeah.
Which is the most fascinating part of the movie, just to see it all unravel under Johnny and him being and him start steadily getting older and more tired with the job, and he can tell the thing he created is crumbling underneath him. And that's why he wants Benny to take over, is because he knows new, fresh leadership is needed, and he can't keep a hold on this forever. One day, some young punk like the kid is going to challenge him, and he knows he won't be able to take him. Johnny knew that for a long time before it happened. That's why he was doing the rounds and saying his goodbyes, because I think he knew it was it for him, too. He's like, yeah, this is the one I'm not coming back from. He didn't expect to get shot. He probably expected a little bit more honor, but he didn't think he was going to win.
Yeah. No, for sure. And you can kind of sense that because you brought up before with his, you know, taking the car instead of the bike. And in my mind, that's like him kind of being like, okay, I'm still going to go to do this fight, but I'm definitely not coming back. So might as well. And I don't even think he does it on purpose. I think it's just like subtextually of him just saying that he's done with his life. And he knows that his time is up.
Yeah.
A lot of it's interesting. It's funny you brought up the T-Birds. I was thinking about the Jets from West Side Story.
Or the Jets.
And also Mike Feist. Coincidence? Feist.
Yeah. Like, where do I know this guy? Where do I know? Oh, yeah. Riff.
I remember seeing him in the movie and be like, oh, yeah, I like him. And then he just sits there, which is fine. But, you know, he still, as for a small role that he has, he still has a little bit of charisma there, especially talking with the other bike riders and Kathy. So, yeah, nice little appearance. Did you know Jodie Comer was Rey's mom in The Rise of Skywalker?
What?
That's
crazy. I've only seen that movie like 1.5 times. I didn't pay enough attention to that scene, I guess.
Well, the thing is that this was before she got her big stardom. So I don't even think you would. Also, it was in a flashback, so you probably weren't paying attention. You're just like, this is crazy. This is Shmi's children, or whatever it is.
Palpatine's.
I don't know.
Palpatine's son, or clone son, whatever.
Oh, Sheev. I meant Sheev, not Shmi. Shmi's completely different.
I think the first thing I remember seeing Jodie Comer in was Free Guy.
Yeah. It was Free Guy, and then, promotion for Killing Eve, because she's in that, and then also Sandra Oh from Grey's Anatomy. So I remember seeing promotion for that like everywhere, and it's like Free Guy, oh, who's Jodie Comer? It's the amazing actress from Killing Eve. And never watched Killing Eve, but heard pretty good things.
Yeah, what else has Jodie Comer been in? I know I've seen her.
The Last Duel.
The Last Duel, that's the one I was thinking of.
She's good in that one. She will be in 28 Years Later.
Okay. I haven't seen those movies, but...
yeah, me neither.
It's 28 Days Later, and then the second one was 28 Months?
I didn't even know there was a second one.
I'm going to guess it's 28 Months.
Weeks.
This is 28 Weeks. Okay.
I guess they skip months. I guess they don't want to do months.
It was too long since that. Jodie Comer, she's the best part about this film, because out of our three main characters, I mean, okay, I guess there's four main characters, really, if you count the kid. But out of the, he's kind of the fourth antagonist.
They try to. They were like, oh, there's this kid's backstory of his, like, abusive father and
he abused the father more than the father abused him.
I know. It's crazy. And then it was like, oh, okay, I understand. You wanted me to feel sorry for this person. And then he's just an asshole. He's just an asshole for most of it.
So Austin Butler is doing a lot with very little, but there's only so much to praise him for here. He's trying to bleed a stone. Tom Hardy is great, but he's not doing anything I haven't seen him do before.
Yeah.
Like when I saw
much
the,
a Yeah. Very much a Tom Hardy performance.
Tom Hardy gangster. Okay. That's usually very solid, but I know what that is. That's not... Yeah, like, this is just something he does, and he does very well. I know what that looks like. Jodie Comer, however, every time I see her, she's distinctly different.
She's
Austin Butler, too. I mean, it was brilliant after Elvis for him to do stuff like this or Dune just to show his, like, you know, just to show his range off here. But Jodie Comer is the real standout as Kathy. I love the delivery of her dialogue in that Midwestern accent. It's just so extreme.
It's so flawless.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I think she might be one of my new favorite, like, new generation actresses. Like, whenever I see her, I'm like, oh, Jodie Comer. She's great. Like, I don't think she's turned in a bad performance.
Not that I've seen. Not yet.
Like, with how sad The Last Duel was and just how, like, heartbreaking it is, she was probably the best in that by far.
Yep.
I could make an argument for Ben Affleck being a dick throughout the whole movie, but I think Jodie Comer's performance was really good. Yeah.
I mean, once again, she was... I mean, like, all the marketing for that movie... It's another situation of this, basically. All the marketing for that movie made it seem like Matt Damon and Adam Driver were the stars of it, but it was her. Same thing here. All the marketing I remember was like, ooh, Tom Hardy and Austin Butler, but she's the star again.
Mm-hmm.
Or the standout.
I would even argue that she makes Fall Guy really funny. Like, Fall Guy's funny, but you put Jodie Comer in the role where she has to react to what Ryan Reynolds is saying. She's got great reaction, comedic timing as well. So
definitely. So even just in these three films, she shows such a diversity of skill set. She's what makes her great is that she's the audience stand-in. She's the most normal person here who we can relate to while watching this. Even from scene one, she's going to see her friend at the bar and she sees all these sketchy looking biker guys staring at her and she's like, this isn't normally the kind of place I'd hang out, and I don't really like this very much. I think I'll get out of here.
Yeah.
But then Austin Butler looks at her, so, and you funny. can't ignore that Austin Butler smolder. No way, no how.
It's funny, like, what he does. He doesn't even do anything. He looks so disinterested and interested in the same time when looking at her. I don't know how he does it. I guess he's just a handsome man. So.
And that's enough. Take note, kids. If you wanna pick up a girl like Jodie Comer, just be really handsome.
Look like Austin Butler.
that's all you need.
I saw a tweet where it was like Austin Butler might be the new Brad Pitt in terms of attractiveness, and I couldn't figure out a way to argue against that.
Okay.
In terms of attractiveness, probably.
Yeah. We'll see if he ages like Brad Pitt, though.
I would assume so.
Brad Pitt was attractive 30 years ago, and he still looks pretty good. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. What else shall we say? Huh. I noticed that the music in the movie was always subjective. It was rarely like just trying to tell the story of a scene as a whole. It's more like it's usually always from a person's point of view. Like when, I don't know, maybe I'm just making this scene up, but like when Benny's riding his bike through the town and the music's going, I'm like, yeah, the music is saying, I feel badass, until he runs out of gas. And then the music, I think, starts fading away. The music is always telling a specific point of view. Basically, it's not just cueing the audience generally. It's like the characters in the scene are playing this song in their head. I always imagined whenever music did show up. It was interesting approach.
Yeah, I didn't really notice the music that much when watching this, which I think, you know, good thing. You know, if it's not, or unless it's weird. It's like, it's either a good thing or a bad thing, because
yeah.
I think music plays a very important part in making a movie. But if it's so downplayed that you don't notice it, then it's not great. But if it's so overplayed that it like takes over the scene, you can't even hear what the people are saying. You're like, well, this is way too much. No. But yeah, I didn't say it. But yeah, I found it to be pretty subtle and well done, I would say. Not a lot of what I thought it was going to be, where it was like, well, it kind of is. It's like some songs from that time, but not like the super popular songs of the time where it's like, you know, the radio hits. There was like an actual movie score in there sometimes.
I was expecting a Born to Be Wild needle drop, but that would have been too on the nose. I did, however, like when Funny Sunny got a job at the end outside
yeah.
the theater at Easy Rider. I'm like, okay, that's a good nod for
funny.
The big movie about bike culture in that era.
Yeah, I remember Funny Sunny, him pulling up, like, is that Norman Reedus? It was really hard to tell. And then I was like, of course it's him. He's been a freaking bike guy just all his life in real life. I like his introduction. It was like, yeah, guys from California sent me down to beat y'all up. But I thought I'd just, you know, chill here.
Can I hang with you for a while?
Okay. Can I hang with you for a while? Yeah, sure. It's just a really random like introduction, and I thought was great.
Yeah, it's, well, the opposite of introductions, but I like. I don't really know how to describe it except just exits. How as the movie went on, the cast slowly thinned out at first, pretty subtly, yeah. and then a lot more noticeably. It was like,
yeah,
by the end, Johnny's only got two of his main guys hanging around the table with him.
Yeah.
When he used to have all the originals around, like, all the originals either quit or die or...
died.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty... It was interesting just to... Because, again, it's like... It's so subtle with how everything is in this movie. I think I'm just realizing that now, especially with the cast dwindling off as the movie goes. Mm-hmm. And you start, and only like the really important characters are shown to like
Brucey and Cockroach.
Brucey, Cockroach getting killed off or like excommunicated in a way, or thrown into hiding, because that's sort of, I guess they represent sort of, Johnny and just also the entire biker gang's morality and how they start to dwindle away and these other guys start to go away as well and are being replaced by the new gen.
But even Brucey's death was, it was prominent, but it was also subtle in that it didn't happen right away. He'd been gone for a while before anybody even mentioned, oh yeah, things started going to crap once Brucey died. I'm like, oh, wait, he hasn't been in here for a while, has he? Now that you mention it. And I even thought that later. I'm like, oh, Michael Shannon hasn't been around in a while. Actually, a lot of these guys haven't. Where'd they all go? Some of them died. Some of them got happy endings, actually. That's why I like the...
Where's Boyd Holbrook, star of Logan? I love that guy.
Exactly. They just disappeared. I did... Like, in the end credits bit, that some of them actually got happy endings, at least.
Yes.
So that helps. Like, Cockroach became the motorcycle cop.
Mm-hmm. I also liked in the end credits when they showed the pictures from the book.
Yes.
How much of those pictures that they recreated in the movie. Like, those two bikers hanging by the house, and then... like the guy hanging around, like there was a lot of shots that were almost a one for one with pictures from the book. Yes. And I assume for anyone who's a fan of the book was like, oh, that's crazy that they did that. But yeah. I don't even know if I've heard of this book. if I'm being honest. But I bet it's huge in the biker community, or somewhat. I don't even know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how many people were chronicling this specific subculture in this time and place. It's probably a valuable time capsule for this era of American history and motorcycle history, for those who are interested. Let's see. Sound effects, really good in this movie, especially the sound of the motorbikes. In a movie about motorcycles, that's very important. Bikes have to sound good. Loud.
They do have to sound aggressive. Good.
And costumes were really seamless, personally. I didn't even think too hard about it. They just felt like stuff people from the late 60s would wear, which may be less hard for the actual motorcycle guys, because I feel like bikers basically dress like that now, but it's a lot harder for characters like Jodie Comer, who she dresses more like people from the period dress.
Yeah.
So they had to get hers more spot on, and that felt pretty right to me.
Yeah, the costumes, I think, were excellent, because not only were the the cuts, you know, the motorcycle jackets they were wearing were really good, but there's so much variety to them too, where each member, at least each member near the beginning of the movie, had sort of a different type of jacket, but it all said Vandals on the back. So it just added to the overall context of this is a club, but there's so much freedom that we have in this club too. So it's not you have to get this jacket, it has to look like this, blah, blah, blah. I love that variety of it.
That also reminds me of, I believe it was Boyd Holbrook's character who was super into bike customization. And I love how he was talking about how different everybody's bikes are. Everybody's got their own custom parts and pieces and have it souped up in different ways, all custom tailored, which is just awesome. They're all individual, which is reminds me why Johnny was so pissed off in that one scene where it's like, oh yeah, you know, the guy from the gang, he died and his dad wouldn't sell me the bike. that's a custom bike, that's a strong part of him, and I knew him better than you did, so what gives?
Yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah. Let's see. Besides Jodie Comer's dialogue, even hers in general, I found the dialogue a touch repetitive sometimes, but it was also realistic way of speaking. It didn't feel like somebody's, it nearly felt improvised, which is a credit and a detriment at the same time, where I'm like, okay, sometimes it's a little annoying to hear, but it also sounds genuine. So it's well written, but not great. It's weird to describe. It's weird to describe true to life not being ideal, but I guess in my mind, I'm trained to look for a more idealized and efficient way of speaking from my movies. So this is one of those ones where some people will either love it for sounding super true to life. You could say that wow, great writing. Or some people would be like, movies aren't supposed to sound like this, get to the point, which you could call a detriment. So that's a in the eye of the beholder sort of element.
Yeah, very subjective type of thing going on there. I liked the dialogue, especially all of Jodie Comer's bits. It felt very natural, especially when she almost interrupts herself when telling the story to get the guys to move the bikes off the lawn, or, you know, something's going on in the kitchen or someone interrupts it. So that part felt very natural. And I get going back to Michael Shannon's performance, his whole story about him wanting to go to war, and then his whole backstory too. I thought his performance felt very natural and very sad. And to, because it's back in the 60s, right? So they didn't care much about mental health problems, but you could totally see him struggling with something, but not fully understanding what it is. I thought that part was really well done.
Yes.
One other thing in my notes here. I'm wondering if Johnny maybe set up that red dress incident.
Yeah, I don't.
There, I felt like there was a
strange.
There was. I feel like there was a little bit of a hint that he maybe tried to set that up to get rid of Kathy, or try to scare her away, so that she'd leave Benny alone. And
yeah, I don't. It's so strange. That part to me is so strange.
Because it was like, ooh, she's in trouble, and he comes to the rescue at the perfect moment, but also. Yeah. Like, enough happened to teach you a lesson, maybe, if that's what he was going for. You hang around us, this might happen to you if I'm not here. So, like, if you leave Benny, you leave him to me. But also, Benny was a prick in that scene for leaving her there. I thought immediately, I'm like, oh, really? You're going to leave her here with these guys who you don't even really trust?
Yeah, with a bunch of, like, new guys you don't even know who just came back from, like, war and shit. And,
If it was the old guard who she all knew, that's one thing. But with these guys?
Yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. I really thought they were about to go all the way with it. And I was like, this is going to be so uncomfortable to watch. And then...
It was already uncomfortable.
Oh, super uncomfortable. But yeah, that's an interesting take. And I wouldn't put it past Johnny, I guess, for wanting to keep Benny. So...
But also at the same time,
makes it a little bit more interesting, but also that's fucked up.
Yeah. But also, I don't know how tough Johnny really was, because it nearly seemed to me like Johnny was playing a character the whole time. Like the real Johnny was just the guy who did the day job and everything I mentioned before. And the Johnny at the motorcycle club is basically just play acting that Marlon Brando character from the movie he saw that inspired the whole thing. I don't know if that was Tom Hardy's intent, but that's nearly how I saw Johnny. Is the real Johnny's actually a pretty tame guy, but when he's with the guys, he's playing a part. He's playing the gangster rebel guy. And everyone else is like, whoa, Johnny's so tough. And like he'll follow through, you know. He'll do the brawls, and like if someone's challenging him, he'll fight tooth and nail and be adequately violent. You know, he'll order his guys to burn the bar down on a whim, just as a power play. Like he can be that guy, but I still feel like he's playing a part.
Yeah, very much so. I agree with that. I think there's a lot to look into subtextually. With this movie, I thought the wild from, you know, us being film students, the Wild One reference is pretty funny, especially with how influential I think Marlon Brando was just throughout his entire career. It's an interesting look into Johnny's character and like that whole triangle and their whole relationship with all three of them together. With Benny kind of being like the child of two divorced parents where he just elects to just run away. So like when he just fucks off,
that's a great analogy.
By the end of it, I was kind of like, that's weird. Like I don't know what I was expecting from Benny besides more. Like I just wanted more from that character, but that's not how the story went. So I guess it was just my expectation going into it.
Yeah, I think at the very least the movie was paced well. I was never bored. Basically, every scene had a purpose or taught me something about motorcycle clubs. It was efficient for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, just under 2 hours, which is rare.
Nowadays.
Like a live action film these days, yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah, paced pretty well.
Pretty what good. I will say...
Wasn't drawn out.
I was disappointed in terms of the idea of teaching me things about motorcycle clubs. I feel a little let down because even by the end, I never really understood what this club was supposed to do. I'm like, the whole movie's about the motorcycle club, but it seemed like, okay, I get it. They joined because they're outcasts who mutually are bike enthusiasts. Okay. But they even admitted most of them don't have day jobs. And they're all paying basically union dues to be here. They all wear their colors, but it seems like most times they just drive around town looking badass and like drink and party. And sometimes they like burn down the bar if they have a problem with rival gang members or, you know, get revenge on the people who screw them over. I'm like, what do they do? Because even at the end there, I'm like, okay, when the kid took over, they basically turned into organized crime. Okay, I know what that is. That's a purpose. You're just a gang. But what did you do beforehand? If organized crime wasn't your thing, you clearly were doing more than just being motorcycle enthusiasts. But you were an organized crime. But they even seem to discourage petty crime.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what are you guys? Like, what are you all about as a group? What are all these groups about? I'm like, I kind of get the lifestyle. I get the characters. I get the vibe here, but I don't really know what's going on. Just why? And what do you do all day besides just drink and ride motorcycles?
I think that's about it. I don't know what else to tell you.
Maybe I'm not missing anything.
It's just
anything.
That simple. Yeah.
Maybe I'm reading too far into it. I don't know.
Just like a brotherhood that protects each other, especially with the... That's the weird part, too, is like, okay, so they burn down the bar after Benny gets fucked up. And then there's that scene where Johnny's like, Brucey's like, we should get out of here. And Johnny's like, no, they're scared of us. But then they don't do any other criminal things after to make me think, why are they scared of you?
Yeah, exactly. It felt like a one-off. It felt like he's doing a show of power, but we've never seen them do criminal things like this under Johnny before. And we never see that after either. Like, they have fist fights with other gang members. They have some violent challenges for amongst themselves. Some of them die violently, but like motorcycle accidents like Brucey, but we don't see very many crimes. So like, was this a one-off? Was this a thing to be like, okay, Johnny starts doing stuff like that, so the new members join up because of that? They're like, wow, we're the guys who burned down bars, right? No, that was a one-time thing. No, we're the guys who burned down bars. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if
interesting is the word, but it's, yeah. It's more of I needed more.
Yeah, I got some problems with it, but I thought it was pretty good on the whole.
Yeah.
I think it'll have a better life in streaming, like we were saying.
Yeah.
It's got...
It's a flawed but simple movie. So, that's how
It does what it's trying to do pretty well. I don't really have many problems with it from a technical point of view, other than nitpicks, like, why do you label it Kathy's interview? Like, that stuff was... Fine, that irks me a bit. But basically everything else, I'm like, okay, yeah, there's good visual storytelling, musical cues, audio cues are good. There's some good visuals like the broken foot and like Brucey hitting the car. Like there's some good shock value in there. The dialogue is, once again, it's kind of, you like the style or you don't. I'm mixed on it, but thought it was well executed for what they were going for. acting's good. Characters are a little underwritten. But I'm like, I don't know. What do you want from it? It taught me something about this specific time and place in motorcycle clubs. And it was entertaining for 2 hours. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll find a better life on streaming because it's not doing good in theaters right now.
Yeah, and when it does, because nobody's watching it, we're going to be one of the only game in town reviewing it. So when it gets big on streaming, come back and find this episode.
I will say it's okay.
We're playing the long game here. So, got a question of the week for this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you were to start a motorcycle club, what would you name it?
What would I name it? Well, I can't say I have a very good knowledge of motorcycle clubs' names, so I don't know if there's like themes to follow other than they usually sound badass. But let's start with you. Let me think on it a sec.
Well, as a Canadian, I think it'd be really funny to have a club named the Hosers, which is like a derogatory slang name for Canadians, apparently. I can't remember what it is. I think I looked it up once. It was like, what was it? It was like calling someone. Oh, I gotta look it up real quick.
Okay, you got me, and you gave me an idea for mine now, but I'll let you look up the hoser term.
Oh, it's the Canadian slang is for unsophisticated rural person. So it's just like
okay.
Like I guess a slang for redneck.
See, as a Canadian, I hear the term hoser all the time, but I never really question what it means. It's just, oh, you're a hoser.
Yeah. You're just basically calling someone stupid.
Yeah. Okay. I thought of mine. The Canadian geese.
Ooh, that's good.
Very, very aggressive bird. Yes. Very threatening, territorial, aggressive bird.
Yeah.
But Canadian theme.
You ever walk by a flock? It's like a do or die situation.
For the Canadian geese,
the way you gotta walk by them is like nothing's happening. You just gotta walk by them and like don't even interact. Don't do that thing where you got your phone and you're like tracking it as you're walking by. Just walk by them, and you'll be fine. And if they do attack you, just grab them by the neck and fucking do the Hulk thing. Just Hulk them like in Loki.
All right, so now who would win in a fight, the Canadian geese or the hosers? The probably perennial Canadian geese. Battle.
Yeah, probably Canadian geese. They're vicious. I'm just thinking. We're just a bunch of hosers. I don't
bunch of hosers really versus do. The geese. If you want to see this battle play out, come to Canada. Just watch the streets. See what happens. Yeah.
It's the geese win every time. Well, they've been called hosers. More than once in my life by multiple different people as national terrorists. That's what they are.
Yeah.
They terrorize the country.
From coast to coast to coast. Anyway. No more to say on the bike riders, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it's all right. Pretty good. If you got 2 hours to kill, sure. Watch it.
If you like, if you like bikes and American history, it's good.
Yeah, pretty good.
All right, where can we find you?
You can find me at Ryan Walker Official on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Thought Plane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe in 2 weeks, in case you weren't listening at the start, where we have not exactly a late Pride Month thing, but it's like just a celebration of attractive men in cinema and TV. Till next time.